Let's back up verse 6 and read down further so we can get to a little more of the background as we get to 11. Okay, let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Okay, the Lord warned several times about deception. Don't be deceived, don't be deceived. Now here he's telling us the way that most deception takes place is through vanity. Okay, and then when it takes place, God's wrath comes down upon the individual who deceives others. Then he says, verse 7, be not ye therefore partakers with them, the deceivers. Okay, the ones who deceive others. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, and then proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. Okay, that's where we stopped last week, gave some references on that. Okay, but the idea is not to be partakers with them. And then verse 11 it says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Now, I've had two people tell me within the last 24 hours that my desire of politics is too pure, meaning that you got to have room for compromise. I would say, why do we have to put up with that in politics, compromise? I would say you could have minor areas of compromise within the dictates of the Constitution, but when there's somebody outside of the Constitution, I don't believe you should compromise. I'll give you some examples. I've watched several interviews where usually the news industry guy will ask Ron Paul something like, well, if you don't get the nomination, of course they don't think he's gonna, will you endorse any of the other Republican candidates? And he's come back and said, well, I can't do that. That would be going against my conscience. Now, I agree with that. And then one guy even asked him, said, well, would you want the endorsement of President Bush? And he came back and he said, well, I think that would hurt me more than help me. That goes against some things I believe. And the guy said, you mean you don't want the president's endorsement? He said, well, I think it would go against some things I believe in. Now, I believe that's honesty. Now, another thing is I watched this host ask Huckabee. Huckabee is a Southern Baptist preacher, retired, or ex, or whatnot. And the question was asked him, if you don't get the endorsement, would you accept the VP under Giuliani? Now, you know anything about Giuliani, Huckabee claims to be a moral man, you know, pro-life all the way, you know, rah, 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 you know, red-blooded American male, all that stuff. That's what he promotes himself to be. Okay, and Giuliani, well, the second divorce was caused because he brought his adulteress, to live in the same house with his second wife. She didn't like that. She divorced him. And so he moved out and then lived with a couple sodomites for a few months. This guy is pro-choice. I mean, and then to ask that question to Huckabee, that guy danced around that like I've never seen anybody dance before. Never came out and answered the question. And even, I think McCain was mentioned also. And I'm sitting there thinking, why don't this guy just come out and say, no, I will not be under him? It's because I dare say that the guy wants to keep the options open. That's compromise. I mean, and all it is either what, I believe both of those two people, Giuliani and Huckster, they believe the Constitution to what benefits them, but what doesn't benefit them, they're going to pitch out. You know, just like the Bible correctors. They believe some of the Bible, but not all the Bible. Okay, and the idea is, this verse says, we are not to have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. When you know a man or a person is, they are under the works of darkness, you and I are not to rub shoulders with them. We are not to fellowship with them. Now, granted, if you don't know anything, but yet when you discover things, then you can make a statement or, you know, part company. But we are not to have fellowship. That doesn't mean you can't witness to them and you try to bring them to Jesus Christ. Fellowship is the idea that you're in the same boat with them and you are pals with them. Okay, where, you know, how would the average person feel in this church if I would join the local ministerial association? You know, first off, I'd gag if I'd had to do something like that. And if I did go, they wouldn't ask me to come back again. Okay, several years ago, I got a letter from one of the local churches in Rensselaer. This is a long time ago. St. Peter's Episcopalian Church. That's where I had to get the letter from them. And they were asking if I would ask questions to the new pastor that they were wanting to ordain, a missus. So I wrote them back, and I said, you sent a letter to the wrong person. 1 Timothy 3, verse 1 says he's got to be the husband of one wife, and if she is the husband of one wife, I certainly don't think you want her or it, you know, in your church. You know, and I just left it go at that. And I hear through the grapevine that, oh, that was a great offense. How terribly what was said, you know, all that stuff. Read it. You know, these people are living a life of deception. Okay, and they are deceiving others. So verse 11 says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. That's what I did. Reprove them. Show them where they're wrong. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. Okay, now there's that word, in secret, or secret societies. There's one topic that if you call Rush Limbaugh, and if you call Sean Hannity, and if you call any of the guys, they're going to hang up on you and call you a wacko if you bring up the word conspiracy. That is one issue that they don't want to discuss. Oh, do you believe in a conspiracy theory? No, rest assured, I don't. I believe in conspiracy facts. It is a fact that there are evil men that always want to take over something that's good. That has gone down through history time and time again. It's usually a good man that starts a work like D.L. Moody, and it's a bunch of leeches that come in and take over the work. Liberals. If D.L. Moody came back today, walked in Moody Bible Institute, he would boot 99% of them out of there. He wouldn't be appreciative of what's going on there. If, I mean, old Butler University and Baylor University, I mean, they got so much wickedness going on, it's downright pitiful. If the people who started Yale and Harvard universities to train preachers, if they came back today, they'd kick out all of them. Okay, and so what's going on in secret? Okay, at the word secret, I'll take us back to Ezekiel chapter 8. Well, you say it's a shame to speak of that. Yeah, the idea there is not a shame to reprove them. You obviously have to speak about it to reprove them. The idea there is to accept these things. What goes on in secret with high political figures? Okay, the common phrase is, and I would dare say many of us have heard this, that he is in the know. Are you in the know? People in the know. Where did that phrase come from? Well, you can trace that back to Genesis chapter 19 when you have the two angels walked into Sodom, and as they're in Lot's establishment, Lot's house, here comes the Sodomites, and they are pounding on the door, and they said, we want to know them. That's in the know. What goes on behind the scenes, the closed doors, what goes on in the secret events that often these high officials take place, you'll read some of it in Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 7. And he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, and behold, a hole in the wall. It's a common saying, hole in the wall. Then said he unto me, son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged in the wall, behold, a door. And he said unto me, go in, and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beast, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about. Okay, abominable beast. That would be the unclean animals, Leviticus 11. So what did they have portrayed on the wall? Well, Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, and then, all Donald Duck and Pluto, and Porky Pig, all these little, they went down into the underground tunnels of the Disney World Company. The whole city that they have underneath, where they have gone on down. There are sections that straights don't want to go to because often the ones in the little animals are getting their jollies about kids sitting on their laps. And if you read some of the stuff about Disney Company, Disney World, and how that came through and what they're actually promoting in those places, you think differently about that stuff. People say, well, they have good family values. Maybe years ago, but I wouldn't say now today. I mean, there you can get a lot of research on some of this stuff, okay? And then verse 11, it says, and there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel. And amidst of them stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then said he unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery. For they say, the Lord seeth us not, and the Lord hath forsaken the earth. Okay, and then 13 and 14 is another issue. 15 and following is another issue of sun worship. Verse 16, sun worship. Verse 13 and 14 is a mother-son worship. Okay, and what goes on in these deep, dark caverns is most Americans would be shocked. If you've ever heard of Bohemian Grove, you can find some weird stuff going on over there in a virgin forest of the Redwoods, where high public officials like to run over there and run through the woods, and Henry Kissinger and company and that whole crowd, and where they worship a 40-foot owl statue called Molech. If you remember that name, you'll remember that in the Old Testament. If you go to the Pennsylvania Capitol building in Harrisburg, if you go up into the governor's reception room, you'll see portraits or paintings around the top of the wall, which I've mentioned before, that gives the Christian heritage of Pennsylvania. Okay, but yet before you walk into the Capitol building, you have life-size statues of men, women, and children all naked, kind of interwoven around each other, and it's on both sides, and that's what goes on in secret. Perverted stuff. Okay? And so a lot of people are shocked by these things. If the average American knew what some of these politicians do behind closed doors, and some of the high religious leaders, a Patsy Robertson and company, and that kind of crowd, or the Pope and company, and the priests, and the bishops, and the cardinals. We've just seen a tip of the iceberg, as far as the Catholic Church. And the last pope, Pope John Pauli, the Pauli won a cracker, the second one, was buried in a trapezoid casket. That's kind of a Dracula-type casket shape. That's a sign to other people in the world. And you see, does this surprise somebody who reads the Bible? If this stuff was going on in the Old Testament, when kings and queens were sacrificing children in order to get power from the devil, if this was going on back in 600 BC and 700 BC and 800 BC, we obviously know the world's gotten better, where this doesn't take place anymore. Well, no doubt it does. Okay, and this is what Ephesians chapter 5 is, kind of aiming at, is about the deep, dark deeds of the dark world. Several years ago, I remember that the Mormon prophet, there are some Mormons that were so upset with the Mormon prophet, the guy that's going to answer all their questions, the guy was known to be a homosexual, and it was known that they were hiring a bunch of girls for these parties at nighttime and stuff, okay, and these people were actually publicly protesting this stuff when they discovered it. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Okay, and so Ephesians 5, verse 11 and 12, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. I have a preacher buddy up in Michigan that the capital of Michigan, I think it's Lansing. Is that Lansing, the capital? Okay. Several years ago, they would start hoisting the United Nations flag on the Capitol building on October, is it 24th, I think it is, the United Nations Day. They have April Fool's Day in the spring, April 1st, and then there's one in October. I think it's October 24th. And Dan Hardin and his church, they would go and protest. And you'd have all the feds behind the buildings. And so Dan Hardin was out there, and they would street preach. And, of course, the police officer were there. And he'd preach to them for a while. And he would just kind of say, some of your buddies aren't here protecting this wickedness going on because they got the blue flu. You hear, fellas, you'd sell your mother out for a nickel. And, boy, would he lay into those guys. And they didn't know, you know, they just had to stand there and take it. Well, what he'd do is... they was going to have like a protest against this going on in Michigan. I mean, the governor allowing them to put the United Nations flag. And so I got him on video. And so he walks up to the podium, Dan Hardin. He says, you know, it's cold out here. Nose gets kind of runny. And he whipped out a UN flag and blew his nose in the flag, you know, and then set the thing down on the floor and then stepped on it, you know. And then he had his whole family come up and sing a song as they're standing on the UN flag. That's reproving them. Okay? Ephesians chapter 5. That's what he was doing. It is a shame to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. Okay? Rather, reprove them. Verse 11. Verse 13. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. So if you go into a dark room, hit the lights, and the cockroaches scatter. Okay, the same goes with your country. Okay, when you shed the light on these secret plans of trying to get in the North American Union, when you shed the light on that, they don't like the one carrying the light. They're going to try to shut that one up with the light. Okay, and the same goes when you try to expose, when you expose the new Bibles, you know, the fake Bibles and everything. All the ones that's pushing those things, like Rupert Murdoch, the owner of the NIV, the copyright to the NIV. Okay, when this starts getting exposed to these people, you know, then they're not going to appreciate the one shining the light on them. Okay, the NIV, when it came out, you know, it removed 16 verses from Matthew to Romans. And I've got that little Witch Bible tract, and it's got the 16 verses listed, matching the New World Translation, the same 16 that are missing. Well, then they came out with a Reader's New International Version. You know, I sent, of course, International Bible Society that track showing the 16 verses they're missing. Well, when the new Reader's International Bible came out, they put those verses back in. Obviously not by conviction. They got exposed. Then in the mid-90s, they kind of broadcast, the International Bible Society broadcast that they were going to try to have a gender-free Bible. You know, they didn't want he or her or stuff like that. They didn't want Christ. I guess they wanted some Epaphrodite. I don't know what they wanted. Okay, and so they kind of made that a public announcement, and even the NIV people were mad at them on that one, the ones with the NIVs. And so they came back and said, okay, we're going to stop that project. And then a few years go by, and they've published a gender-free Bible. They lied. You see? And the thing is, when you shine the light on that, now it's not going to sell much because it's such a fake Bible. I mean, it's so fake, like the Reader's Digest Bible. Remember when the Reader's Digest Bible came out back in the 70s? It was so fake, nobody bought that. You got to get closer and closer to the real thing before it can really sell. Okay, but here, we got to shed the light on things. Okay, verse 13, the light is the light of the Word of God. Another light is the light of the Lord Jesus Christ. He said, I am the light of the world. Okay, so we shed that light. Let that light shine. Okay, several years ago, I was talking to a fella, and I started asking him. I knew he was in jail for a DUI or something. So I just kind of said off the cuff to him, I said, you know, I've walked past bars, never been in one, but when I walk past them, they always seem to be dark in there. Is that true? He said, yeah, they're usually dark. I said, why is that? Well, I'm not certain about that. And I said, well, I wonder if this is a problem. John 3:19. And this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. He said, oh boy, I don't know. And I read the next one, for everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. I knew that hit pay dirt. Made him think. Okay, so we are to shed the light, and the light's gonna reprove the darkness, verse 13. Verse 14. Wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. Okay, wake up. The common say, wake up. Okay, now when you try to wake people up, just remember when you wake up, when you are forced awake, when you wanted to sleep longer, of course, when that happens, you are very joyful. You jump out of bed and you say, thank you for waking me up, because I really needed to get up. Right. It's like somebody asked this lady if her husband, if she wakes up grumpy in the morning. She says, no, I let him sleep. Okay, and so the thing is that when you do try to wake people up, most of the time they're not going to appreciate it. In other words, the first reaction is going to be anger. Because that's the reaction you often get on the streets. Okay, they're going to be mad. Several years ago, I wrote Dr. Ruckman, and I told him I'm in a town that's got a Catholic college with a lot of Catholics. I said, what's your advice? He said, well, I'd publish a little tract that says something like 10 reasons why I'm not a Catholic. Don't put the name on it, and then just flood that through the town. And he said, the three reactions will go in this fashion. They're going to get mad first, scared second, and saved third. You know, I found that to be true. They get mad first. Why? That's the reaction when you want to wake somebody up. Scared. What if he's right? What if my church is wrong? What if? And then the more they think about that, they realize that Jesus Christ is a Savior. Now, the problem is that family's going to pull them back in. They're going to try to pull them back in. Okay, and so those are the three reactions. So you need to understand that. A lot of times when you tell somebody about the truth, when they get angry, the one who's telling the truth, they say, oh, I offended them. So what? Truth is offensive. The cross is offensive. Okay, and we are living in a society of a bunch of hypersensitive people. And you have to understand that. It doesn't mean you automatically try to offend somebody. But yet, the truth in itself is going to be offensive. So, verse 14, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead. Okay, the idea of dead there has been mentioned back in chapter 2, where an unsaved man is dead in trespasses and sins. Even though the person is dead, doesn't mean they're dead as far as their soul's left their body. There are a bunch of walking dead people. Unsaved people are walking dead people. Christians who are living in a life of pleasure, 1 Peter 5, verse 7, they're living a life of death. The world is infatuated with death. Okay, just think about it. Isn't it Halloween time? They bring out the skeletons and everything, the heads and everything. And people are fascinated with death. I don't know what their problem is. But it's interesting, you know, your car and my car and everything, it operates under death. What are we putting in the gas tank? The gas comes from coal and oil, which was the animals of the flood compacted down. Is that not true? And now we are burning dead bodies going through the air, the fumes and everything. Okay, and so, you know, it's people are just infatuated with death. Okay, so verse 15, he says this. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Circumspectly, circumference within a boundary of rules. Okay, for a believer, our circumference of rules is obviously the Word of God. Okay, but yet rightly divided. Okay, if a born-again believer, let's say a born-again believer is going to need a job someplace. Okay, they go to the place of employment, and the place of employment will have a job description for you. Okay, and so that will be the area where you walk circumspectly. Your Christianity will be put inside those rules of that company. If you can't approve of the rules of that company, then don't go there. Don't take the job and then gripe about the rules. Know the rules beforehand. Okay, if somebody wants to become a public official, what do they do? What should they do? They read the rules first. What's the rules? The Constitution, the state constitution, the national constitution? That's a job description. Okay, and so that's a job description. He reads that and says, okay, am I willing to stay within inside that? I should. Now, we don't trust them, so we're going to make them take an oath before they get in office to stay within those boundaries. So as soon as you hear of any candidate talking about health care, what do you know? They're stepping outside of the rules. They're doing somebody else's job. This has been going on for years and years. Why was it that Israel wanted a king? They wanted a king so he'd go out and fight their own battles for them. Well, when it came time to fight their battles, here's Goliath, the best man for the job. I mean, the one they hired him for, the king, why? To go out and fight his battles. Why did he go out there and fight Goliath? He didn't go out there and fight Goliath. They had to rely on a lowly young kid to go out there, David. The idea is that people often, when you have big government, you have small people, meaning their character's small. When you have big people, good character, like in the beginning of our country, okay, then you have small government. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way ours was designed. Now, whenever you hear a politician talking about something outside of his job description, he is lying about his oath of office. It's been reported that in one of the meetings, talking about some things going on with the president and everything, that one of the people in the meeting was reminding President Bush of the Constitution, and he got peeved about that. He said, what do you always bring that up for? It's just a GD piece of paper anyway. Now, when you make a comment like that, if you don't like it, then don't take an oath to uphold it. You see? And what he's doing, when a politician steps outside of their circumspectly rules, it's like a spouse stepping out on their husband or wife. That's what it is. You see? And a lot of times people don't understand these things. Uh-huh. Except for one. Yeah, I do. Right? They step right outside of it. You see? And they're supposed to stay with inside that. And it's very, very small in the national level. And what it doesn't say in the national level, that's allowed for the states. You see? And that's where, and if it's not allowed for the states, who's the highest authority? You and I. Okay? And Americans don't understand this because they don't teach this in the schools. And so then we got a bunch of people on top who don't understand this and refuse to be public servants. And now the master's going to cram it down your throat and my throat. Okay, and so here in verse 15, see that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. There's a circumference for you and I. Now, our doctrinal circumference for today will be Paul's writings. Okay, doctrinally speaking. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore the rest of the Bible. Anything that doesn't contradict Paul is safe ground. If it's a direct contradiction of what Paul has written. For example, in James chapter 2, it says faith without works is dead. But in Romans chapter 4, it says that you and I get righteousness without works. So which one is right for us? Well, obviously the one written to us. James 2 is written to Jews. Okay, and so we walk circumspectly. That's our walk in life. Verse 16, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Redemption. Now, today it's probably Christians that are about the only ones that understand redemption, the idea of redemption. Okay, here is redeeming time, buying back time. Americans in the early 20th century understood redemption as far as currency goes. Okay, they had a piece of paper currency, and it will have a little phrase on the top left. This may be redeemed for lawful money of count. And then it says that to U.S. Treasury. So you have a piece of paper that's really of no intrinsic value. But you at that, though, back in those days, and even after the Federal Reserve System got going, you could take this piece of paper, go to the bank, and say, I would like $1 silver or $1 gold. Then they would have to hand that change, give you an exchange. That's redemption. The piece of paper represented precious metal, a commodity, real money, a currency, okay, but that's easier to carry. It's easier to put in your wallet. You know, instead of a bunch of gold coins, you know, have them come walking in. So it's easier to have the paper. But yet you could go to the bank and redeem it, get the real coin, and then take it home. That's redemption. Okay, now here it's telling you and I to redeem time, buy back time. Now, a lot of times the frustration that people have that get saved late in life is that they look back in their life and they see all the wasted time. Okay, and people waste time. It's just amazing how much time they waste. I mean, if you got to go someplace and you know you're going to be sitting for an hour and just sitting, that's wasting time. Have something to read. I mean, you don't want to pick up the three-year-old magazines that they've got there. Take something with you so you're doing something with your time or witnessing or passing out tracts or doing something instead of just sitting there. When you waste time, you're wasting your life. Here it says you can redeem time. You can buy it back. Now, in this day and age, it's easier to redeem time than it was back in the 1800s. Now, how can we do that? Well, a cassette tape, CD, a DVD. You could write something down. You could tape record yourself. You could actually do a recording on a radio. You see, like on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock, I'm preaching in Rensselaer in the church, but on the radio at the same time. Oliver B. Green's son continually plays Oliver B. Green tapes. Here, he's dead in heaven. He's still getting rewards because he's redeeming time. He's buying back time. He's making up for lost time. You can write something down. Write down your testimony. Write letters to people. Okay? Write letters and send out gospel tracts. What you're doing is you're redeeming time. You're buying back time. When you put your life into somebody else's life, okay, when you put some time into this person goes out and lives what you taught them. You are buying back time. It's not a cat that just got 9 lives. You can have more. When a man lives for himself, he lives for one person. When you live for others, you can live for thousands. Okay, and so this is why you learn to write some things down. When you learn to write some things down, you see how difficult it is to write. You realize how little you know the topic. Okay, try to speak something. You know, try to, and you're gonna get frustrated. You're gonna try, you know, the first few times I wrote letters like to editors of newspapers, I'd write the thing like 15, 20 times and still not be happy. You know, the Witch Bible tract that we have, I probably went through that thing 50 times, and then after it was printed, I found out some more mistakes. You see, I kept going through this thing. I still find problems that I want to change something. Okay, the thing is always make something better, but learn to do these things because after you're dead and gone, what you leave here, your testimony. If you're going to have a will, put your testimony in there. Probably the first time an attorney happens to read it. You know, put a testimony in. Not that they have to. You can probate stuff outside of the courts and all that stuff. But even at that, the idea is to redeem time, buy back time. You can invest in somebody, invest in a missionary. When you invest in a missionary, here they are in another field. You put your money in that person, and then you're buying back time. You're redeeming time that way. So you can redeem time. You can buy it back. Okay, Colossians 4, verse 5 is another parallel of this. So he says this not only in Ephesians, but he says this in Colossians. In Colossians 4, 5, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Redeeming the time. Put a video on YouTube. Look at all the idiots on YouTube. Do one that's right. I mean, I was trying to do something like that. I got so frustrated with it, I couldn't figure out how to do it. Okay, but even at that, what you're doing is you're influencing others. You know, we got a little peon thing, but it's got the reference Bible on there. And here I had nothing to do with it, but last week off that thing, 13 Bibles were pushed out. I mean, were bought through that. Okay, and so now I've got 13 Bibles someplace in this country. You know, 6 went east, you know, 1 couple went to Delaware, 1 couple went to Wyoming, you know, and it's all over the place. I had a fellow several years ago. He said, I found this little piece of paper, and the title of it, 50 Things That Happened at Salvation. He said, I found this in Francisville. I said, you did? I said, I wrote that. He said, no. I found this in Francisville. I said, yeah, but 50 Things That Happened at Salvation, alphabetical order, right? Yeah, that's right. I wrote that. No. I found it over in Francisville. I said, okay, you found it in Francisville, but I'm the one that wrote that. You know, I've got letters from a guy in Malawi, Africa, picked up a witch Bible tract. How did it get over there? I have no idea. You know, a guy over in the Philippines got a witch Bible tract. You know, and wrote me about it. How it gets there, I have not a clue. You see, there's a fellow that studied the currents down in Florida. And he'd get on a boat, and he'd go out there, and he'd figure out if he'd take a track and put it in a bottle, seal the bottle, throw it out in the water, it would float to Cuba. So he wanted to get some tracks to Cuba. Well, he didn't feel it was doing a whole lot. Of course, he had no way to verify it. Okay, and so he decided to fly an airplane over Cuba. He flies the airplane over Cuba, and the airplane get plane trouble, and he landed in Cuba. And they threw him in jail. While he was in jail, one of the inmates said, look what I found on the beach. It was a tract that he put in a bottle. And you see, and then somebody else wrote him from Hawaii and said, I picked this bottle up off the beach in Hawaii. Now, how did that get from over there in Cuba through the Panama Canal over there to Hawaii? You know, that's what God does. A lot of times when we get out of the way, God can work. Often the problem is us. Okay, and so these are many ways you can redeem time. We got probably 5 minutes left. I was thinking about that old guy in Australia. Would you tell that story? You need to tell it? Okay. Just stand up right there, if you would, and relay this story.